tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to founding Chipacash.
Awesome. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Hey, everyone. My name is Ham Serunjoji, born and raised in Uganda, although some people claim it's Kenya. But I went to high school in Kenya, in Mombasa, for 2 years. So I have a very strong affinity to Kenya, and I love that country very much. Besides being an awesome neighbor of ours, I spent a lot of time there as a young child as well, just visiting relatives. So yeah, born and raised in Uganda / Kenya. Went to high school at the end of my diploma program in Mombasa, the Ugandan Academy. Then moved to the US in 2012 for university. I went to college in Iowa. I went to liberal arts college in Iowa called Grinnell College. Then after that, I graduated in 2016. I worked at Facebook in New York for a few months, and then I moved to Dublin, Ireland. So I lived in Europe for 2 years, working for Facebook. Then I moved back to the Bay Area in 2018 to start Chipper. And Chipper is a cross-border P2P payments platform. We are essentially, think of, you know, something like Venmo, but works across borders. We operate in about 6 countries right now, 7 if you include the latest we just launched in, Uganda, Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, Rwanda, South Africa, and we just launched the UK, which is our first country outside of Africa. So we're working very hard on a few more market launches. We have some exciting products coming out. But yeah, that's, you know, me in a nutshell. Chipper is 2.5 years old as a company. Exciting the last 2 years to have seen the growth that we've seen. We've raised over $53 million in venture capital. We have over 3 million users. Teams are growing quite fast. We have offices in 5 countries around the world, and we're hiring aggressively. So if you guys know any smart people, point them to our careers website. So we're always looking forward to working with exciting and talented people.
Great. I mean, you have an incredible story also on how you started Chipacash. Like, how did you identify the opportunity, and then how did you, like, now make the idea and form it into a company now?
Yeah, so when I was in Grinnell, that's where I met my co-founder, Majid, and he's from Ghana, so he's from West Africa. And we were very strongly aligned and bound by this idea that when you grow up in Africa, you grow up with those experiences and you have those insights about the unique challenges people face on the ground. So you kind of have an idea of the special sort of ways that you can solve a problem that's very unique to Africans or people living in Africa. And we thought that, well, if we have those insights and those experiences, and then we also have this immense privilege of being educated and trained in the West, how do we sort of bridge those two worlds to build solutions? And, you know, we'd brainstorm about what ideas we could pursue. And, you know, one thing that for me, you know, really shaped my upbringing was watching how my parents, when I was growing up, both self-employed, really struggled with making cross-border payments, whether they're paying people that they worked with in another country or receiving payment from someone they worked with in another country. So I knew firsthand that this was a massive problem, and Major did too. And so we looked around, and it's clear that no one had attempted to solve cross-border payments, right? All the emphasis had been on either local payments in a specific country, and that's what mobile money does very well, or, you know, just remittances to Africa. And you know, we looked at that space and said, this is an exciting opportunity. You know, we think we have an idea of how to solve it. And we launched our product in late 2018 around the idea that, you know, there's a big potential and a lot of people who are really hurting with the high costs of sending money across the continent and the difficulty that comes along with that. So that's sort of what got us narrowed on that particular use case.
So maybe something else I may ask is, how is it raising capital as a person maybe of color in the US? And at least in Sweden, my experience has been that it's pretty tough. Maybe it's smoother sailing in the US where you are at.
It's hard to raise money anywhere. It's hard to raise money as a first-time founder with, you know, no credibility. It's even harder as, you know, as a person of color, frankly speaking, in Silicon Valley, live alone, a non-American. And you sort of compound each of those things, sort of compounds on top of each other and makes it infinitely difficult. And when you sort of look back, we, in many ways, being so naive about starting a company, sort of didn't know how difficult that piece would be. And fundraising is what I focus on. So when we first tried to raise money, we had no product. We just had a deck. And I remember going out to meet a lot of investors and we're trying to raise, like a couple million dollars. And I thought that if I had a good story and a nice deck and very, well put together and all the nice animations, that people could get the idea, right? It's obvious that cross-border payments is a big opportunity in Africa. So why would they not understand that? And it really hit me, like a ton of bricks when I got a ton of rejections in that first process. And it was very clear very early on that if you wanted people to subscribe to this idea, you had to show some initial traction, like show some numbers that suggest what you're saying is actually true. And that's a very tough place to be because you need capital to start, but no one will give you capital unless you start. And we had to get creative about how we, used our savings. We ran through our entire savings to the last dollar. We came to within being a month of unable to being able to make rent. We're eating one meal a day. We're, saving in every place we could, living incredibly light, to give ourselves a chance to at least have some traction in like one or two countries. And we had to be smart about how we launch those countries, who our launch partners were. But raising money was incredibly difficult until the first time we got an investment was from a gentleman named Shil Monot, who was the first investor in Chipper. And that really gave us some breathing room to kind of like be able to, do the basics, buy food, pay rent, hire one or two extra people. From that point onwards, we didn't look back. We just sort of ran as fast as we can. And it's gotten easier ever since then, but the difficulties you still face as a person of color raising money in Silicon Valley for a business that's predominantly operating in Africa remain, right? Even to this day, the field of potential investors who are willing to make an investment that's focusing on sub-Saharan Africa is very small. And within that field, they'll hold you to a much higher standard than they usually hold a company that is based in the Bay Area because of the increased uncertainty. And it'll take a longer time to get comfortable with the space. So your whole process has to be longer, more thorough, more scrutiny. And those things take a toll on you, right? As a founder, you're worried about a bunch of other things. To add on to the complexity of a very thorough, very scrutinized, very stressful raising process, it makes it hard. But oftentimes I just keep reminding myself that at the end of the day, you only need one investor. And typically when you sort of go through all that pain and find the right person, it's worth it. And I think we've been incredibly fortunate with the investors that we've taken on board since we launched. We have a great group of investors who have been very supportive, but it's been a painful process to get those investors and to end up in a place where we're happy with the ones we have and ultimately be able to raise the capital that we need. And today, obviously, we raised a significant amount of money. So a lot of people seeing it from the outside almost think as though it's happened very easily for us because of how fast it's happened and how much we've raised. But actually, it's quite the opposite. It's been incredibly difficult.
And then the question I would ask then is, how do you get yourself through those difficult times and rejections? And then if you have like some sort of inspiring stories in between there.
I think I'd say the most important attribute or the most important determinant of potential success is perseverance. More than anything, more than talent, more than intelligence, more than even more than luck. And luck is a big component of every entrepreneur's journey. But perseverance is probably the most important of all because it's really just that stubbornness when the whole world is throwing shit in your face to be like, I'm still going to go through this process and see it till the end. That ultimately determines if you'll have a good chance of success or not. When we in the middle of getting 1,000 rejections, and your morale, getting, really bitten down, it's hard to, remain focused on why you're doing what you're doing. And having the will and the determination and even the stubbornness to say, like, fuck it, I'm just going to keep doing this is a very powerful, powerful attribute that I think every entrepreneur will do well to have. Elon Musk often says that running a company is sort of like is similar to chewing glass and staring into the abyss at the same time. And that's a very true statement. You often don't see where you're going. You can only have so much visibility ahead of where you are. And you often have very little information to make a decision on, but you have to make a decision. And it's like the perfect storm for things to go wrong. And in that chaos, having the mental and emotional will to say, I'm still going to keep forward is a very powerful thing. And that often separates people who give up and people who don't. So I think for us, what kind of kept us going through that process is my co-founder and I, we were just very hell-bent on the fact that this is a big opportunity. Someone has to do it. And we're very stubborn people. We're very driven people. We weren't going to be sort of put down by, an initial, rejection or things getting hard. We really were in it because it's what we wanted to do. It's what we believed we should be doing. And those things really helped us get through those really difficult times in the very beginning. And they are still difficult times as you keep growing. They just change in their nature. But that ability to just sort of focus on why you're doing this and try to block out all the reasons why you shouldn't be doing it is a powerful way of getting past the difficult moments. And it's a combination of that. Obviously, I mentioned luck is a component, in every entrepreneur's journey. Hard work. We just worked ourselves to the bone every day. We didn't, take any shortcuts. And a combination of all of those things put us in a place to have a chance to succeed.
Okay, so another question would be like, how? What was the moment when you realized that you're having like a bit of breakthrough, especially when you're setting up the product? Because like when I read and listen to a lot of entrepreneurs, you feel like there's this moment when you feel like this will take off. Just before that, it's a bit of a struggle, and just after that, it gets a little easier. So, where do you feel that moment was for
That's a good question.
Chipakash?
Yeah, I often get that question in different forms, which is kind of like when did you realize you made it or that sort of thing. And it's very funny because it's all relative, right? Like I'll give an example. The first time we ever processed $100,000, we were like, "What the fuck? That's a lot of money. Like, who would ever trust us that amount of money?" And then we did $200,000. Then we did $500,000. Then we did $1 million. I'm like, Jesus, this is madness. And now we do 100 million plus. And at every stage, you have that same euphoria and that same excitement of, wow, this is incredible because it's all relative to where you are. And then there'll be one day, hopefully, when we're doing billions and it'll be normal. But the idea is that you sort of put one foot in front of the other, worry about the stuff that's in front of you at that moment, and you deal with tomorrow's things when they come. Obviously, there are moments in the company's history when major things happen that sort of take you from point A to point B. Like when you get your first investor, that gives you some actual money to do, other things besides just your own basic survival. When you obviously, hire a certain number of employees and have to put in place processes to support those large numbers, when have, a certain number of customers and use cases and partners who rely on you, then those moments are definitely, are sort of etched in your memory because they're significant. But there isn't any one big moment when you're like, okay, now we've made it, or now we've crossed that barrier of being a real business versus being, a fun project. I think it's a very gradual, very blurry spectrum. It's like if you sort of think of it as a wall, that on one side it's red and on another side it's yellow. Somewhere along the way it changes from red to yellow, but it's a very gradual change. You can't really point the exact moment it comes from red to yellow, but it does. On both ends, it's different colors. And that's sort of what, in many ways, I think a company is, which is along the way you come from being, just a fun thing, experimental thing, to being more serious and actually being a real business and having employees and benefit programs and HR and, all these things that make you, a large business. But somewhere in the middle, that shift is happening in a very gradual process. And it's very hard to pinpoint exactly where, but there are specific moments that are more memorable than others. I know that's not exactly
No,
the
I
answer,
get it.
but that's really what it is. It's very hard to find the exact. I can't give you a date when.
I get it. But then, like, there is also, like, when you talk about, especially foreign investors, about Africa, I think there's a lot of misconception about it. I mean, I guess you've met a lot of that as you've tried to raise. So if you like to want to try and at least open people's mindset about Africa, what one thing would you want, like, to change about the way they perceive the Africa, or at least tell them what excites you about the African continent?
Yeah, I think representation is a powerful thing. When I started raising money for Chipper, the only company that had done it successfully before us was Flutterwave and Paystack. Those were the only two. And at the time, no one really believed that there was an opportunity to significantly invest in an African business. But today, I mean, there's so many. And obviously, I hope that Chipper played some part in normalizing that and having more investors actually see that. There's actually a massive opportunity there. The investors that passed on us back when we were trying to raise money, today are more aware that, okay, that's actually a real opportunity. And we'll therefore look at subsequent potential companies from that geography seriously. I think for what I would tell people that are, and what I've always told people who are looking at emerging markets or Africa in particular, is that take your lens that you have or that you view the West with, and look at Africa with its own lens. I think a lot of people try to understand Africa in the context of Silicon Valley or the West or what's worked here. And that's really where the confusion comes in. It's a completely different set of rules that we're dealing with in emerging markets. And I think, India and China have shown that to some degree, Africa even more so to a higher degree. If you're looking at how this next, 3, 4, 5 billion people will be coming online, how they'll be using services that are coming online, how they'll be moving their money, you have to sort of get rid of any assumptions you think, any biases you have from what you've been used to in the West, right? You have to let go, and that's a very hard thing. Letting go of biases and assumptions is a very difficult thing for anyone to do. But you have to start there and look at this new opportunity for what it is. Right, a whole new generation of people and quantity of people that are coming online for the first time through a mobile device, have the same demands and aptitudes for convenience that anyone in the world does, have very unique challenges for how they move their money and the environments within which they move their money. And I think when people are able to do that, then they better see the opportunity in Africa than when they look at it from the West perspective, when they look at metrics like what's the GDP per capita or what's, what are the unit economics? And that tells a story which is less exciting, as opposed to we'll look at the opportunity from the other way around, look at it from the consumer's perspective and see where they're going, and then better understand the opportunity, to capture that value as those communities and societies evolve and become significantly more interconnected.
All right, I think we have like 8 more minutes before you jump off. So I would ask, like, anyone has any question for Ham, you can just raise your hand very quickly. You take the five.
Thanks for the talk and for everything. I just have a question, and from what you've been saying, Clipper Cash has only been around for about 2.5 years, and you're expanding into all these African countries. How do you manage that? I know remittance or moving money around Africa is quite a difficult problem to solve. How do you approach that problem?
It's a very difficult problem, as you rightly said. I think the core of everything we do is sort of this notion that if you want to, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And we want to go both fast and far. So we want something in the middle. But that often means having strong partnerships. Right. We work in an ecosystem which is still very, very young. And what that means is that oftentimes the partners that we work with are also still growing and sometimes can't support the rate of growth that we have. Or that means we have to be both vertical and horizontal at the same time. We have to build the service we need and our own service at the same time. And ultimately, how well you're able to work with others in our ecosystem is a strong determinant to how effectively you can grow. Because there's no way you can do all these things by yourself. And so one thing that we really emphasize a lot is working with strong partners and supporting those strong partners to keep growing.
Thank you.
companies that we work with for various aspects of our business, we actually work with them in a very deep level technically as well to make their products even better for our own use case. And those small things will make a difference. And then also, we have a very thought out expansion approach. Our teams that we leverage to support new market expansions, have obviously learned from the last couple of years of us doing this and, what the best way to get into a new country is, what to look out for, how to do it effectively. And so there's a part of it that is an iterative process, which we get better on as we keep expanding. And also, just make sure that we're working with very strong partners and supporting them to be better because that makes us better. And so the rest of it is, case by case because every country is different. There's some countries that I wish we'd already launched in, but obviously, the challenges that we have to overcome in those countries before we can launch. So as much as it looks like we've been able to get into a few countries, I think from where I sit, I wish we'd gone into more. That's sort of me as a person and as a leader. I always sort of obsess over the stuff that we haven't yet done right. But I think that there's still very, very many more obstacles for us to overcome as we want to expand to many more countries.
So maybe the final question would be then, what are your parting shots like for a young group of entrepreneurs and investors like this? What would you advise us?
That's a very hard question, and I'm very humbled every time I get asked that. I think one thing that I've sort of learned in my own process since leaving Facebook to start Chipper is that the hardest thing about taking a leap of faith is the fear of failure. And I think as a society, how we treat or how we classify failure is part of this. It's that how will I face my parents? How will I face my community? How people will look up to me, look at me again. And that holds back so many talented people from doing important things. And I think when you sort of break that down to its most basic form, failure really is in many ways self-driven or at least self-reinforced. What I'll typically tell people who are looking to start something or take a leap of faith is that you don't owe anyone anything. And you only have this one shot at life to make the most of it. And when you sort of think about it in those very simple terms, doing the things that are important to you is what you should optimize for, as opposed to doing the things that you think are important to others. And when you sort of think about it in those basic terms, it makes making those hard decisions easier. At least you have one less thing to worry about because an entrepreneur's journey is a very difficult thing. It's a very lonely path. As I'm sure many people who are on this call have probably tried on their own, it's very difficult to do anything new and try to see it through successfully. So what you want is to minimize the number of things that will stand in your way to success. And many times that often is how your own personal paranoias and fears driven by fear of failure or fear of disappointing others drive you to make suboptimal decisions. So that's one thing I'd first emphasize, which is, optimize for the things that you think are important to you. And then the second thing is, this is something that I picked up from an interview that I watched Jeff Bezos do. And he sort of had this, what he called a regret minimization framework, which essentially was when he was thinking about making any big decision, when he was thinking about starting Amazon, one of the things he sort of asked himself is, what will I regret more? Will it be having stayed in this very safe, comfortable job? Or will it be not having known what, could have been if I'd gone and done this? And I think that if there's one thing that every human being can agree will eat at you forever, it's regret. And if you sort of think about your life in that, in that context, and sort of think about what are the things that I will do today that will allow me to have the least regret in 5, 10, 15 years. Sometimes that helps you make a decision. And for me, when I sort of thought about it, that perspective, when I was leaving Facebook, I knew without a doubt that if I had stayed at Facebook because it was safe and comfortable, I would always have that question in the back of my mind of what could have been if I had taken this leap of faith. And I knew fully well that even if I had failed, which was the more likely outcome, at least I would have known that itch in my brain would have been scratched of, knowing what would happen if you do this. And then I've gone back and found another job somewhere else. You know, I'm sure all of you on this call are very talented. You guys can all go and do whatever you want. So, you know, you sort of owe it to yourselves to, you know, give, you know, whatever you have, whatever ideas you have, a shot. Do the things that make you excited, make you happy, and make the most of them. And everything else sort of kind of falls in place after that. That's the best that I can say beyond just, you know, everyone's journey is very unique. Trajectories vary, you know, so just focus on your own trajectory, focus on your own path, and you know, everything else that you know, you can't control, don't worry about it.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Hope to see you around, definitely.
Awesome. Thanks for having me,
Very
guys.
kind of you. Thank you.